presented by the Electric Autolite Company and its 22 great manufacturing plants. Builders of precision equipment for 35 years. World famous for Autolite spark plugs, batteries, wire, cable, and electrical systems for automotive, aviation, and marine use. Your host, Mr. Ronald Coleman.
Thank you and good evening. At this moment, two young American flying heroes are waiting beside their shortwave receiver at an Allied base in the Pacific. They have returned from their first bombing mission over Truk Island. After the curtain falls in our play, we will have a chat with them. It is to them and to all men and women of the Allied armed forces overseas and at home that we dedicate this global half hour.
On December 17, 1903, a skeptical crowd gathered on Kill Devil Hill, North Carolina, to watch man make his first successful flight in an engine-driven, heavier-than-air machine. The Wright brothers' plane looked like a huge box kite with a gasoline engine attached. The pilot appeared to be sitting in space, with nothing to tell him how the engine was performing. Today, this uncertainty is gone from flying. Our pilots know definitely how their engines are performing. Precision gauges and thermometers, engine performance instruments, give them this information in detail. For example, the exact pressure of the fuel and oil, the exact temperatures of the coolants and oil for each individual engine are separately indicated on dial type gauges. Many engine performance instruments are made by the men and women of Autolite at La Crosse, Wisconsin, an organization that developed precision measuring devices to take the guesswork out of flying. Their manufacturing know-how is reflected not only in the accuracy and dependability of these instruments, but in the vast quantities they are producing for the fighting planes of the United Nations. Autolite leadership in engineering and producing these instruments in volume is proof again that the name Autolite means precision manufacturing. And now, Mr. Coleman again.
The ostrich is a strange bird, double-toed yet swift-footed, richly feathered yet grounded. Now, once upon a time, there were five ostriches who were very fond of each other, but who did not like a sixth. And when they saw him coming, they would all hide their heads in the sand. So the sixth ostrich would walk around crying, "Where is everybody?" And after many years of this kind of treatment, which, as you know, has become proverbial, and is even referred to as social ostracism, this poor bird became very lonely. So lonely, in fact, that having nothing better to do, he found his way one wet afternoon into an arch over La Comedy. But suppose we tell you all about it.
The play, Ostrich in Bed. The players, Ronald Coleman and Joan Bennett. This is what happened to Mr. Bart Reynolds one evening when he returned from work with love in his heart and the homecoming cry on his lips.
Jean! Jean, darling, I'm home.
Shh. I know you're home.
What's the matter, darling? Have you a cold?
Bart, listen to me.
I'm listening.
I tried to reach you at the office. You went in all afternoon.
Oh, I was at the bank. What is it, darling? What's the matter?
Darling, I don't know exactly how to tell you this.
Tell me. Tell me what?
Bart. We, you and I...
No. No!
No what? All I want to tell you is...
Yes?
There's an ostrich in our bed. Bartman, all I ask you to do, absolutely all, is to open the door and look in.
No, darling, just come here.
Yes.
How long have we been married?
7 years. What's that got to do with anything?
It's got to do with why I love you. Never a dull moment. What? Remember, last year I came home and you announced you'd gone into the fur business with one rabbit?
What's that got to do with...
And the year before that, why, you'd gone into the chicken raising business with five roosters.
What's got to
and
do with...
And the year before that, someone had given you a bee and a flower and you were going to corner the honey market.
Will you answer me? What's that got...
Business venture is all this ostrich nonsense a preamble to. Come on now, darling. Let's have the truth.
Bob Reynolds, are you insinuating that I'm lying?
Ah, Jean, my sweet, my dear, my only insinuation. After six, our dinner guest has arrived. He's the man without humor, the joke, and then I'll help Seth.
Bob Reynolds, you come with me.
Now, Jean, stop.
Come ahead.
At me.
You
now,
come with
I
me.
I know, but
come
where?
Come on, bedroom.
Now, Jean,
I'll show you. I'll show you. There. Look.
It is an ostrich. It is an ostrich.
When I heard the sound of the door, I thought to myself, now who can that be?
It's an original thought, darling, but get to the point. So you heard a rap on the door.
So I said to myself, now who can that be?
Now,
and I started to the door, and on the way I slipped and fell. Bart, that new floor wax is absolutely no good.
I know, darling, but the point.
And when I got to the door, I couldn't open it because the lock was stuck. So I said, I'll be with you in a minute. Not having the slightest idea what was on the other side when I finally did get the door open. Oh, Bart, there it was.
But it's preposterous.
I tried to scream, but the scream stuck in my throat. So I just stood there and it just walked right by me and down the hall and into the bedroom and sat down on the bed. And that's all there is to it.
But, darling, people don't open their front doors and find ostriches there.
No, Bob.
Ostriches do not walk into people's houses and sit down in their bedrooms.
No, Bob.
It's preposterous.
Bob.
Yes?
Why don't you tell that to the ostrich?
Hello. Hello. Is this the police department?
Yeah, Sergeant Buchanan speaking.
Sergeant, this is Mr. Reynolds of 803 Catalpa Street.
803 Catalpa Street.
Yeah. A very, peculiar thing has happened here, and I wish to report it.
I'm listening.
Well, it's this way.
Say it, Bart.
It appears that there's an ostrich on our bed. That is to say that there's an ostrich on our bed.
I'm afraid we got a bad connection. What did you say?
I said an ostrich has come into our house and he's on our bed. Now, would you send a squad car over here quickly? You see, we're expecting very important dinner guests, and the ostrich ought to be out of here by the time they arrive. Hello. Sergeant, are you there?
I'm here, mister. Hey, don't you think it's a little early in the evening to be feeling so happy?
I'm not happy.
He's not happy.
Hey, who was that?
Oh, that was my wife. Now, please, will you please hurry and get some policemen over and get this ostrich out of here? Sergeant, do you hear me?
I heard you. And I got one comment to make. There's a war going on. The police department is short on help. We're overworked. We're tired. And we haven't got any time for drunks! Now go stick your head in the bucket and don't bother us!
Hello. Hello. Is this the Society for the Protection of Dumb Animals? I said, is this the Society for the Protection of Dumb Animals?
Society for the Protection of Dumb Animals. Can I help you?
You certainly can. Do you pick up stray animals?
Yes, sir. Dog or cat?
Well, it's sort of a bird.
Male or female?
Well, I don't know.
I'm sorry. We must have that information.
Oh. Well, hold the wire, you know. Jean, is it a he or a she?
Well, really, Bart, how should I know?
Hello? We don't know.
I'm sorry. We must have that information.
But it's a bird. Don't you understand? It's a bird.
I'm sorry. We do not pick up stray birds. Would you be interested in a nice dog?
I would not. Now, look, this bird...
We have a complete selection of stray dogs. The dog is man's best friend.
I told you, it's hopeless. We'll never get rid of that bird. We'll...
Jean, listen.
Listen to what?
It's almost seven. Mr. Calvert.
Mr. Calvert?
What do you think Mr. Calvert will say?
But we can show it to him.
Ah, Jean, believe me. One mention of the ostrich, and we'll be in every newspaper in the country. I can't call off this dinner. It's part of or public relations, so there's only one hope. Give Mr. Talbot dinner and get him out of here fast.
Dinner? Oh, Bart.
Oh, Bart, what?
The dinner. I haven't even begun the dinner.
Oh.
Bart, do you think that Mr. Talbot would be interested in ostrich on toast?
Fundamentals, my dear Reynolds. What this country needs is to go back to fundamentals.
Agreed?
Oh, yes, yes, Mr. Calvert.
The fundamentals of simple living and simple food. May I congratulate you on your salad, Mrs. Reynolds?
Thank you, Mr. Calvert.
Yes, what America needs is the simple, peaceful way of life. Your way of life.
Thank you, Mr. Calvert.
Here you are, the two of you, self-sufficient. You, Mrs. Reynolds, capable of making a fine dinner.
Our cook's in a defense plant.
Immaterial and irrelevant. You are capable of conducting your own family life sanely and efficiently.
Thank you.
Not at all. It has been my experience that the average American family has too much horseplay and not enough horse sense. The wild, unrestrained, so-called humor of the average American family leads to family discord, dissonance, and divorce. Agreed, Reynolds?
Oh, yes, yes, Mr. Calvert.
The American home must once again become a quiet haven. What's that?
Woodpeckers.
I beg your pardon.
Oh, yes, she means night woodpeckers.
Night woodpeckers. Oh, yes. Now, where was I? Oh, yes. The American home. It must once again become an institution self-sustaining and self-productive. An arsenal of livestock. There that is again. What is that?
The arsenal of livestock.
I didn't hear anything.
I thought I did. To continue, that to be self-sustaining, every home should make use of our feathered friends. Pigeons in the attic and chickens in the basement.
What about the bedroom?
I beg your pardon.
Come in, Mr. Calvert. Have you read any good books lately?
What?
I mean, about the American home. Just the other day, I ran across a book that said...
Just a moment, friends. Listen. Oh, it's someone at the door. Aren't you going to answer it?
Oh, yes. There must be somebody at the front door. I'll go through.
No, just a moment.
Yes, Mr. Calvert?
The sound is from that direction.
Oh.
Reynolds, you're just going to sit there. Aren't you going to find out who it is?
Well, I...
Oh, it's no use, boss. You might as well show him.
Show me what? What's going on here?
That feathered friend you were talking about.
Well?
We already have it, Mr. Calvert.
I beg your pardon.
Even when you see it, you won't believe it, but... Here goes.
What is this? Where is he going?
Look down the hall and hold on to your hat.
You know, for a moment, that looked just like an ostrich. It is an ostrich.
Jean, he got out. Look, don't let him.
It's all right, boss. Everything's under control.
What?
Mr. Calvert has passed out.
Holy smoke.
And the ostrich is eating the salad.
Well, Mrs. Reynolds.
Well, Mr. Reynolds.
Here we are.
Here we are.
Who writes your dialogue these days?
Oh, a short, fat fellow without a head.
Tell me, Mrs. Reynolds, has anything amusing happened to you lately?
Oh, nothing much. I met an ostrich yesterday.
Anyone we know?
A tall, thin fellow with feathers.
Where? Along the boulevard?
No, right over the salad bowl. Tain't funny, Mr. Reynolds.
Well, at least we got rid of Mr. Calvert.
Yes, and I'm very sleepy, so let's go to bed. Well, I sleep.
There's always the sofa.
Oh, this is crazy. Call the police. Call the fire department. Call.
The Society for the Protection of Dumb Animals?
All right. But wait until it's morning. If I have to call out the wet, the waves, and the spars, out it goes.
Out it goes.
But
what is it now?
In the morning. you think it will expect breakfast in bed? Bart, wake up.
What?
It's after seven. Please wake up.
What?
It's after seven.
I'm awake. Oh, ye gods, did I have a dream?
I know. You dreamt there was an ostrich in the house.
Yes, how did you... Oh, gee.
Yes, Bart. Your dream is walking around the bedroom.
Well, how do you know?
I looked in a little while ago. It's eating your shorts.
The plain or the striped ones?
Bart, listen.
It's coming in here.
Oh, Bart!
Now, don't be afraid. After all, it's only an ostrich, and an ostrich is a bird, and a bird hasn't any teeth, so why should we be afraid of an ostrich?
Bart, it's looking at you.
No, dear. I think it's looking at you.
Bart, do something.
Hello, ostrich.
It doesn't like you.
Oh, now, why jump to conclusions? It's just lonely, that's all. Escaped from a zoo or a circus or something. Yes, obviously, a lonely bird.
It's got a head like a snake.
No. On the contrary, I think it's a very handsome bird. And where are you from, old boy? Old girl? Look at the way it turns its head and listens. Do you think it understands us?
I wouldn't know.
Ostrich, I'm going to talk to you now, man to man.
Bless its little heart.
Look, ostrich. We're very appreciative about your frightening Mr. Calvert out of here, but believe me, enough's enough. Surely there's a nice cage waiting for you somewhere. We're not a good family for an ostrich. You wouldn't like our social life. We like people. The house is always full of people, and you like privacy. You like...
Your head in the sand. Maybe I shouldn't have said that.
Oh, now you've done it.
Bart.
What?
The way it's looking at us. It's as if it's trying to make up its mind.
Yes. Whether to stay or to go.
That's it. Whether to stay or to go. Ostrich, listen. We're not the family for you at all. I can't cook, and I can't sew, and I can't...
Jean, stop that.
Well, I was just trying to tell you.
Listen, we're sane, mature people, aren't we?
Are we?
I'm going to settle this right now. Right now.
Bart, where are you going?
To open the front door. Now, you infernal, long-necked imitation of a feathered friend. Get the devil out of here. Do you hear me? Get out.
Bart, it's going. Bart, it's gone.
Well, what do you know?
But where?
Quick, the window. Look, it's crossing the street.
Climbing the stairs of the Johnson house.
It's tapping on the door.
Bart, Mrs. Johnson's opening the door. And there it goes in. It's gone into the Johnson house.
Well, that explains it.
What?
It had the wrong address.
Bart, I was just thinking.
What?
I think the ostrich made a mistake to move over to the Johnson's house.
Mistake?
Yes, they're such a large family.
Well?
And I hear they're always running out of meat ration points.
Oh.
Poor ostrich.
All right, so you're defaulting, causing fire and causing an electric that drains power from your battery. The wires and cables in your car should be examined and checked by a responsible serviceman. Drive into your local car dealer, your serviceman, or any one of the thousands of Autolite service stations. Ask them to replace worn spark plug wires with new Autolite Steel Ductor, now available for cars and trucks. Autolite Steel Ductor was developed by ignition engineers, men who, from experience, know how to make automotive wire and cable that will give the longest and best service. Have the wiring in your car checked tomorrow. If sections are worn, burnt out, or faulty, replace with Autolite wire and cable. Remember, the name Autolite means precision manufacturing. Now, Mr. Coleman again.
A soldier in a military hospital was restless and unhappy. There were so many things he wanted to tell his girl. Things about his experiences overseas. About his trip home and how much he missed her. The Red Cross gray lady sat beside his bed. Was there anything she could do for him? Yes, there was something. These bandages. She could write a letter for him to his girl. He hadn't been getting his mail answered lately. Not since that last combat mission over enemy's territory. The Red Cross gray lady looked at him and smiled. Of course she'd write a letter for him. She'd write as many as he wanted every day of the week. You see, that's what she was there for.
Mr. Coleman, the circuit is through now.
Thank you. And now, Joan Bennett, close your eyes, twirl the globe, put your finger somewhere in the Pacific, and you're right on the speck in the map where two boys of the United States Army Air Forces are standing by their shortwave receiver.
Shall I hold my breath, Lonnie?
Yes, just take a good deep one and put on these earphones. Ready?
Ready.
Here we go. This is Ronald Coleman and Joan Bennett calling a base somewhere in the Pacific. Come in, fellows. Come in. This is Hollywood calling. Come in, boys.
Okay, Hollywood. This is Lieutenant Bill Larson speaking.
Hello, Bill. Is Sergeant Frank Stella with you?
Are you kidding, Mr. Coleman? You didn't think I'd miss this, did you?
Hello. Hello there, Sergeant.
Just call me Stella. Everybody does.
Hello, fellows.
Hello, Miss Bennett. Hey, me too, Miss Bennett. Hey.
We made some special phone calls and have messages for both you men.
Yes, Stella, we called your family in Philadelphia and all is well on the Stella home front.
Swell. Hey, can I say hello to the folks?
Yeah, go right ahead, Stella.
Well, hello, Mom and Dad, and my sis Louise, and my two little nephews, Joe and Vince.
That's fine, Stella.
If you don't mind, Mr. Coleman, there's some more brothers and sisters.
All right. Go on.
Well, hello to Al and the Air Forces. And Joe in the Armored Forces. And Helen in the Women's Army Corps.
Is that all of them?
Nope. Hello to... Hello to Rose and Sue and Yolanda and Michael and Anthony.
That's wonderful.
And oh, yeah. Hello to Bobby.
Go on, Stella.
Well, I get that, though. You know, us kids range from Louise 32 to Bobby 3.
Oh, that's a family to be proud of.
I just hope I didn't leave any of them out.
Stella, what do you plan to do when the war's over?
Me? Oh, just get married, settle down, and raise a family, I guess.
And you, Bill, what about you?
Well, that's good enough for me, too. After knowing Stella here, I believe in a family life. But I've got a head start. I'm already married.
Both of you are on the same bomber, aren't you?
That's right. Everything's going to be okay.
All right, Bill. Say, we have a message for you, too.
We called your wife in Hilton Village, Virginia, where she's secretary to the adjutant of the Army post there. She's fine and sends her love.
Oh, hello, honey.
What'd you say, Bill?
Oh, hello, Miss Bennett. I meant that for my wife. And if she's listening in, I want her to know how much I love her. And wherever I am on June 10th, I'll really celebrate.
June 10th? What's that, Bill?
Well, that's our first wedding anniversary. You see, I met Susie in college. She's a blonde, blue eyes, and, well, she's right here wherever I go.
I'm sure she'll be glad to hear that, Bill.
Bill, you were All-State fullback in Kansas in 1940, weren't you, Bill?
Yes, sir.
I suppose football training came in handy, hmm?
Well, you know about that teamwork stuff.
Well, it works.
Sure does. I like to play football, too.
In the 7th Air Force, we get a lot of chances to throw forward passes in our liberators. And we've all got the same goal, Tokyo
and Berlin.
Well, fellas, we'd like to cheer the greatest all-star team in history, the Allied Armed Forces. All right, everybody. Now, did you hear that, fellas?
Oh, we sure did, and that helped us make touchdowns.
Time's up, Mr. Coleman.
Right, well, time's up, men.
We'll keep on cheering and working, boys.
Well, thank you, and good night.
Good night, all of you, and the Stellas and Philly.
Good night and good luck.
And God bless you.
Ladies and gentlemen, we've just heard from two American boys in the Pacific.
Another American soldier stationed in India recently wrote to his wife. I would like to quote from his unusual letter, which, by the way, was printed in the Woman's Home Companion. The soldier to his wife, quote, "Darling, a Hindustani lad came by the other day with the usual basket of bananas and pineapples on his head. After eating half a dozen bananas on a sampling basis, I thought I'd better soothe his feelings with a little conversation. Anyway, this lad started by remarking he had a very large stomach that should be filled with rice. And his wife also had a very large stomach that should be filled with rice. I told him I too had a wife who needed filling with rice. His wife, he said, was a good woman, and it was a good thing to have a wife because you could send her out to carry dirt on her head and earn a rupee a day. And she could come home and cook the rice and sweep out the house. Then he wanted to know about my wife, so I showed him a picture. Very fine, he said. Can she carry dirt good? I assured him a little heatedly that she could carry just as much dirt on her head as his wife could. However, I told him she didn't very often carry dirt because she used her head for another kind of work. Abdul looked doubtful. Does she earn very many rupees to buy rice? I explained that she earned a great many rupees, but she didn't eat rice at all. Abdul looked both surprised and skeptical. Well, what does she eat then? Millets? No, I said, she eats chicken and potatoes and beans and bread and cheese and fish and pie and cake. Oh, I see, Abdul exclaimed. She must have a very large stomach. Tell me more about your wife, he said, squatting on the ground. Well, I said, she's about as tall as you are and slim as a banana tree. Her legs are straighter than a bamboo shoot, and her ankles are small like those of a racehorse. Her skin is smooth like a banana skin. Abdul looked a little doubtful. Then she is a princess, he hinted. Well, yes, I said, I think she is. Abdul picked up his basket and put it on his head. How much does it cost to go to America, he wanted to know.
Ladies and gentlemen, next week we're going to have such an unusual program that I'm sure you'll want to hear about it.
For from Foxhole to Main Street, there is one book which is a source of hope and faith for all of us in these times. Of course, it is the Bible. Next week, Arch Obler's play of living people in our time was inspired by this greatest of all testaments. As an Easter gift, the Electric Autolite Company is devoting the full half hour to this dramatization. Following the play, Dennis Day, who will be with our naval forces very shortly, will join me in season's greetings to two of our fighting men in Alaska. Our thanks to Joan Bennett for being with us tonight. And until next week, this is Ronald Coleman saying good night to you and the boys, and God be with you.
The appearance of service personnel on this program does not constitute endorsement of the products advertised. This program has come to you from Hollywood and an allied base in the Pacific. This is the National Broadcasting Company.